You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
The human beings, my son, they believe everything is alive. Not only man and animals, but also water, earth, stone, and also the things from them. That is the way things are. But the white man, they believe everything is dead. Stone, earth, animals, and people, even their own people. If things keep trying to live, white man will rub them out. That is the difference.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land!
Indian land!
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all say the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man come in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart of the region.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Well, what the bloody hell are you then?
The most feared species in all Africa, a Kaffir who cannot be broken.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Yeah, salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalpress.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And you have tuned in to Indigenous news, thought, and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under the imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, and neo-fascist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. Shout out to the gods and earths and peace to the original family at this time of strife and struggle. I mean, there's a whole lot of things we can talk about, but, you know, we'll keep it short. Yeah, it's the 4th of July. I mean, we can talk about Frederick Douglass, and we can talk about how black Republicans in the United States, Negro Republicans, Negro conservatives. Some Uncle Tom, some aunt. Not every black conservative is a sellout, but you know, the majority are. And you know, we're not even going to bother to name any names. They know who they are. And you know, we can talk about Frederick Douglass, that they've completely, like Dr. King, co-opted and just completely taken totally out of context. But I mean, what's the point? What's the point? You know, we can go on with that. And I really do hope you read the essay on what does the 4th of July mean to the slave. It doesn't answer all the questions, but it's a damn good start. He was there, you know. I mean, he wasn't happy with what was going down in Kansas with John Brown and his sons. You know, he thought that they should wait until the war, you know, legitimately started, as he put it, you know, through the auspices of the government under President Abraham Lincoln. But Harper's Ferry happened anyway, didn't it? You know, Harper's Ferry went down. And as far as a lot of us are concerned, that's when the Civil War actually started, because those were the first shots fired. I mean, it's kind of like the Spanish Civil War. I mean, that was the first war against fascism. I mean, they can talk about going after Hitler in World War II, but no, you know, the real war against fascism started in the 30s. And it was fairly independent, and it was totally left-wing, and it was international. And it didn't work, and it didn't work because the capitalists in Europe, in total agreement, one has to assume, with the capitalists in the United States, definitely with the capitalists in the UK, because, you know, despite what anyone wants to argue today, you know, anybody who knows anything about the history knows full well by now that the upper crust of the British establishment was behind the German fascist government. They didn't want to go to war with Germany. They were not interested in that. And, you know, there's a contradiction there. And if you still want to argue about it, it's kind of, you know, stupid. Remember the royal family, who, you know, dethroned himself so, you know, he could marry a commoner. He spent the majority of his time after he left British government, he didn't want to be king anymore, and handed everything over to his brother, who did not want or expected to be king. You know, he went straight to the Nazis. You know, he was at the Berchtesgaden. Yeah, well, I'm not pronouncing that correctly, but you know, he was at the private villa where Adolf Hitler and his, if you want to believe that Eva Braun and he were actually, you know, together. Well, they were together, but you know, we don't really know what went down between them, and we really don't care. You know, I mean, she was a beard, we all understand this. These are contradictions. That itself is a contradiction. So, you know, when we look at the 4th of July, you know, that in and of itself is a contradiction. You know, here you have a European settler class who is celebrating the liberation of the English colonists from the British crown, right? No taxation, without representation, blah, 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 right? They dress up as the Native Americans that they hate and that they were wiping out at the time, to throw Indian tea overboard into the Boston River or whatever it was. Boston Tea Party. You know, what these clusterfucks today, the tea baggers. That's what they called themselves in the beginning, and that's what I'm going to continue to call them. These tea baggers. You know, they call themselves carrying on the Tea Party tradition, and it's not true. Pierre Poujade, or Poujadism, for those of you who understand French politics, you know, it's the same thing. You know, this basic populism. You know, the same thing Pat Buchanan has been talking for decades. Pure racist, nationalist xenophobia. You know, with a dab of religion, sometimes more than a dab. that is supposed to explain everything, to provide all of the answers, that, you know, when you get all of the quote-unquote alien influences out, that somehow things will level off and become normal and natural again. And, you know, when we hear about the 4th of July, you know, the whole thing is a farce. You know, you have, land being taken, genocide being enacted and performed upon the indigenous people of North America. You know, on the other hand, you have African people being enslaved. In the meantime, natives and African people should be celebrating the what is supposed to be the spirit and the morality behind, you know, this day of recognition. And, you know, and I wonder how many Native Americans are selling fireworks today. How many Native Americans in the United States are waving flags and getting excited and getting drunk today? You know, it's the same thing for my African brothers and sisters. You know, how many of you are grilling pork right now, and frying chicken, and drinking Pepsi, you know, watching BET and the Glenn Beck Show, and, you know, playing a violent video game? You know, how many of you are doing that right now? I'm talking about the 4th of July, when, your community issues, your community concerns, basically your genocide, isn't even being addressed, and you're under a black president. I think that's something we need to be talking about. We need to be asking ourselves as individuals, you know, this individual intellectual insurrection that I'm talking about, it has to happen. It has to happen. We cannot continue to go on like this. You know, these contradictions are in our face. They're glaring. You know, we see what we see, we hear what we hear, and we still want to pretend that everything is okay because, you know, right now I'm having a very good time. You know, whatever it is, you know, for some people it's getting high, for other people it's physical relations, right? For some people it's just simply having the correct, appropriate beat going on behind them. And if they have the sneakers that they want and the earrings that they want, and if their hair color is where it is, and if it's bone straight, even though it's, you know, chemical, you know, the skin bleaching creams, the eye contacts, the tattoos, the facial tattoos, you know, all of the signs of confusion that are going on right now, where people can't separate themselves from the entertainment world. They cannot separate themselves not from information media, but from entertainment media, to, you know, people who, and I'm talking about a personal observation, people who are racist to their core, Europeans, who on the 4th of July are in and out of the tanning centers to the point where they're darker than I am. You know, I mean, these are contradictions, right? These are contradictions. You know, it's a contradiction. And, you know, we should be thinking about on the 4th of July that, you know, these people who talk about the Constitution all the time, that talk about the rights of Americans all the time, when they came to Troy Anthony Davis's execution, they had nothing to say. When it comes to stop and frisk, they have nothing to say about the Constitution. You know, they're complaining about what they have dubbed as Obamacare, which I don't know what they're complaining about, being that it's a handover. It's a total capitalist handover to the insurance companies, which is pretty much the same thing that Bill Clinton was trying to do when he was in office. Exact same thing. He was going to hand it over, though, to one insurance company. You know, Obama, I guess, was being fair. He handed it over to the insurance industry. So, you know, I mean, they wrote this. They had to have. You know, there's no other way around it. You know, I mean, and if that's not the case, then he is simply there for them. And he's not there for us at all. Which we already know that anyway. But, I mean, that just pretty much makes it pretty clear. You know, I mean, this whole thing about single payer is nonsense. What you need to be talking about is this, you know, universal health care. If you don't want to call it socialized health care, then don't call it that. It's just semantics, but it's still, everybody's covered, regardless. Period. That's what we pay taxes for. And, you know, if you had decent food, if you had an industry, you know, that was serious about nutritionally decent food, and if we were serious, had a serious EPA that was, you know, really concerned with protecting the environment, with protecting our drinking water, with protecting our air, protecting us from coal being ripped out of mountains, oil spills in the Gulf, any Gulf. You know, we wouldn't have to worry about these sorts of things. You know, because everybody here would be healthy. You know, and then I know Rick Santorum, the Catholic, you know, seems to think that everyone being educated is a socialist plot. But you know, the more educated people, you know, you have, then the healthier they are, the stronger the nation is. But, you know, they want to continue under Romney. He would pursue this. Not that Obama is stopping this, but, you know, to pursue corporations going overseas if they want to. Because, hey, that's the way the market is, right? Take advantage of no EPA rules whatsoever. No union rules. No human rights rules that anyone has to be concerned with. You know, you can have a SAP, a Structural Adjustment Program, brought on by the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. You know, you can strip these people bare of everything that they have left and leave them with absolutely nothing. I mean, isn't that what's happening? I mean, it's the third world organization of the United States, but this is what you want. This is what y'all were cheering about on the 4th of July. Instead of asking yourselves why the country is in the shape that it's in. Why is the economy based upon war? Why is the economy based upon violence, exploitation? You know, why are we not asking those particular questions? And because we're not asking those particular questions, we're in the position that we are in. And we will be sorry. And we're paying a price for it now. We have people who are living out of their cars. We have Americans who cannot pay any of their bills. We have veterans that are coming back homeless. And they're already dealing with health problems, with emotional problems, psychological stress problems, PTSD problems. The VA is overtaxed. They're talking about privatizing the VA. You know, it's too much. You know, they're robbing Peter to pay Paul so that they can kick the hell out of, you know, James. And take what little money he has when Jesus turns his back. You know, I mean, this is what's going on. This is what's going on. And, you know, look at how they treated Mary after the passing of Jesus. Look at how they're treating women now. And under the auspices of religion. I'm not just talking about Christianity. I'm talking about Islam. I'm talking about Judaism. It's all the way around. All of these religions, quote unquote, come from the same root. And all of them treat women badly. All of them talk about the nation state under God. And they talk about violence, which is all in the Bible. Read your Old Testament. I mean, this is what the settlers are using as a justification in occupied Palestine for what they're doing. You know, genocide, misogyny, violence, war, hate, pillage. You know, it's all in there. Brigandage, it's all in there, you know. And, you know, on the 4th of July, here we have, you know, an election coming up that's based on race, that's based on religion. well, I was going to say racism, but that too. But it's based on religion, isn't it? You know, which is a constitutional fail. But, you know, you never hear any of these people talk about it. Just like with Ron Paul, who received Social Security. Just like his idol, Ayn Rand, who received Social Security and other benefits on the taxpayer dime. You know, of which I was, you know, one of the people that paid for this, you know, obviously. And, you know, in the meantime, she didn't want people I grew up with who needed public assistance, veterans who needed help, you know. She was a hypocrite. Ron Paul's a hypocrite. His Hayek-inspired every man for himself, you know, sort of thing. You know, Milton Friedman sort of a, hey, shock doctrine, you know, what have you. Hey, you know, when you're a millionaire, you can talk like that. And, yeah, I'm not going to take anyone who takes, you know, smiling photographs with Don Black and takes money from white supremacists and gets endorsements from David Duke. I'm not going to take him seriously. You know, no one else should either, especially anyone who's read the Ron Paul newsletter. But hey, you know, 4th of July, right? The Constitution, yes. You know, so yeah, you know, just think about a lot of that stuff. You know, just think a lot about it. As usual, or again, we're going to, at least for a little while, you know, I'm on a thing about this. You know, what do I listen to? You know, so you're going to get a chance to get into the podcasts that I think are important, the podcasts that I listen to, and the things that have inspired this show. This is the Angry Indian, and you are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service. aboriginalpress.blogspot.com.
This is a mortal technique. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Strong evidence suggests that George Bush and Dick Cheney launched an illegal war in which tens of thousands of civilians were killed. We are told to look upon these deaths as an exaggeration or an acceptable loss in the war on terror. But this administration has lied to Congress, spied on Americans without court approval, leaked classified information, and produced phony news reports. People have been imprisoned without charges and tortured, and illegal weapons used. Ask your Congress member to co-sponsor for an investigation. Peace.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
Mi vida la dejé. Pues aquí les mando la aventura Radio Bemba, toda la familia ahí que estamos en Europa. Estamos ahí con Alto Arizona y con vosotros a fuerte para todo lo que
sea. Mi vida va prohibida.
Radio Bemba, Manucho, fuerza con vosotros siempre.
Solo voy con.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that prevents pregnancy. It is not an abortion pill and does not cause an abortion, only the prevention of pregnancy. If you have had unprotected sex or have been raped and need Plan B, contact your local Indian Health Service. You have a legal right to receive Plan B over the counter, meaning without a prescription or a doctor's appointment if you are 17 or older. Plan B must be taken within 72 hours of sexual intercourse to be effective. For more information, call 605-487-7072. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
Radio Insurgente, la voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante. Porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano, en la frecuencia 97.9 en FM.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan! We hate niggers, we hate Jews, we hate faggots, and we hate specs! We people need to get off your ass and wake up! This is America!
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is Radio Angwa Indian. Angwa Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
He was used. He was a person who had been in jail 22 of his 32 years of life. He was the product of our penal system. He was not a hippie or part of the youth culture. They bought him a guitar, let his hair grow, and put a leather jacket on him, gave him money, gave him a bus and credit cards, and told him to do his thing.
I'm Bonnie Faulkner. Today on Guns and Butter, researcher and radio host Mae Brussel. In 1971, after 7 years of research and now living in Carmel, California, Mae Brussel began a regular weekly radio show, Dialogue Assassination. Today's show was originally broadcast on October 13, 1971, and was Mae Brussel's 16th broadcast. Today's show, Charles Manson and the Crushing of the Counterculture, analyzes the so-called Manson murders as a premeditated political massacre designed to destroy the social and political revolution taking place at that time. Mae Brussel.
The Manson story. In this world, in a strange world of covert overthrow of the governments and clandestine armies and secret operations, the problem we're facing is that you're working with two realities. You're working with what we assume is the real way to function and move. And then we're working with a system of what we call power, exchange of power, economic power, power over people, controlling their lives. And in order to do that, you disguise certain persons and send them into roles. They become actors on a stage, and they influence our minds in a way that is not real, but affects a reality that will touch us later. Apropos of the Manson thing, the Oda trial, the murder of the Oda family with accused murderer Frazier goes to trial Monday. It's in the paper today. That was not a hippie murder. I've said it before. They took the trial out of Santa Cruz up to Redwood City. But because the Manson trial affects this particular geographic area, it's close to us. It's close to home. California was where the Flower Children were. Big Sur was the home of people like Joan Baez, Henry Miller, Free Souls, artists roaming. California was an important state in terms of conspiracies to kill candidates and presidents and to affect national policy, and it's part of the military-industrial complex. And I'm going to explain why the Manson trial why the murder of Sharon Tate and the other persons in her home was a political massacre. And other researchers have done work on the John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. I was the first researcher in the United States to turn the other people's minds to the fact that the same lawyers, the same planners, the same teams originated this particular massacre and what effect it would have on our society. It had to be planned well in advance of when it happened. I'm going to give you my conclusions on the Manson. I call it the Manson trial because nobody talks about it being Charles Watson massacre. That's the boy who killed seven people. But the news media associates the name Charles Manson. He made the picture on the cover of Life. He is the man that you associate with killing Sharon Tate. Many people don't even know the name Charles Watson because you're not supposed to know it. Right now there's a hung jury in Los Angeles on the decision of whether Charles Watson is guilty of murdering seven people. He was in the home. He did the stabbing 40 times. He wrote Death of the Pig on the door. The jury can't decide if he was guilty. Now, my conclusions are, number one, that all of these persons involved, the major people, are agent provocateurs. They come at a time to increase violence, to come down on a segment of our society prior to an election year, and to make law and order necessary to protect us from the people at large in our society. Number two, Charles Manson was a patsy. He is identical, historically, to Lee Harvey Oswald, Sirhan Sirhan, and James Ray. Charles Manson killed nobody in the Sharon Tate home or in the Bianca home. He was being charged with these murders. He didn't kill any one of these seven people. He was used. He was a person who had been in jail 22 of his 32 years of life. He was the product of our penal system. He was not a hippie or part of the youth culture. They bought him a guitar, let his hair grow, and put a leather jacket on him, gave him money, gave him a bus and credit cards, and told him to do his thing. It was like James Ray was in a part of our penal system. He was in Missouri in a jail, and he was met with certain persons, and the next day he was out, and there was $20,000-$30,000 of money spent, and he traveled continents and everywhere, and he was to be used at a certain time and place. Charles Manson was identical to James Ray as a product of our penal system. He was used by the news media to slam down on the hippies. We could do 1 hour on the news control of how your brain is shaped to believe that Charles Manson made a robot out of a nice white Christian boy from Texas, this terrible kind of a criminal mind. He was used. And now I'm going into my background on these opinions because they may be startling. People who think they're knowledgeable on our economy or on the other assassinations who never believe the Warren Report throw up their hands. I spoke to somebody just this morning before I came in the studio and said I was doing a story on Manson. And this particular person, educated, informed, said, that's something I'm not interested in Manson. I never would think about that particular human being. And people turn off on the Manson. But this is the way my mind was going. In 1963, I told you how I was studying the death of John Kennedy starting November 22nd. I was studying the use and the misuse of power after the President of the United States had been killed. I was wanting to know who killed him, what kind of people they were, what was their interest, what was their philosophy, what was their politics. How many of them believed that Adolf Hitler should have won World War II? How many of the people involved in that assassination worked in our State Department, defense industry, or had important government positions, like in cabinet now or in Republican National Committee, this kind of thing that is current today. I've been studying since 63. I studied the Cold War, the military-industrial complex in the United States, what we formerly called capitalism versus communism, which now is a disguised fascism with the electoral process over, versus communism. And I studied the economic and philosophical policies of both systems and the religious revolution that was going on simultaneously. In April 1967, the Greek government was overthrown by a military junta. There is a book, I tell you, have your pencil ready for the program. I want you to write down this book. It's pertinent to the Manson, Sharon Tate massacres. It's called Death of a Democracy, Greece and the American Conscience. It's written by Stephen Rousseau. And when Greece was overthrown, the excuse for the junta to take power and end the electoral process was that there was tension and chaos. And they had to prevent that. They had to prevent the May election. The man who was running to be the president of Greece was Papandreou, who captured the imagination of the young people. Now, I'm reading a quote from the book, Death of Democracy. Papandreou captured the imagination of young people and many members of the professional and intellectual classes. He was popular in Greece. He was linked psychologically with the late President Kennedy. He was a man of style and intellect, and they thought for the first time in 30 years they would get a program growing where they'd have a democratic government for the first time. And the people in power felt that no one should tamper with their existing institutional structure, and they kept the power and canceled the elections. Now, the edicts in Greece, when Greece was overthrown, were the following. If it was an economic problem or a political problem, like we don't want communists, we have to save from communists, that's one thing. But the edicts that I noticed in 1967, in April, when Greece was overthrown, and I copied in my newspaper right away, I was reading the daily papers because I was studying power and exchange of power. The United States had exchanged power. I was studying Greece. I study every country. And these were the edicts. No gathering in the open country of more than five persons, and no gathering in any closed space at all. No anti-national propaganda, such as anti-war or anything against a public official. No marches or dissensions. And we will now have what Rousseau described as a Puritan orgy. There would be no beards or long hair on the men, no miniskirts on the girls. The tourists included, everyone in Greece had to attend a Sunday church, mandatory. They called it a Christian coup, because the Jews traditionally do not go to church on Sunday. But if you did not go to church on Sunday, you could be exiled to an island and arrested. That it was similar to the Inquisition in Spain. The students were to turn in every old history book they had, and it would be replaced with a new one. Racial purity was proclaimed, and the theories of Darwin and De Vries were thrown out. They were ordered to protect their Christianity on a public order that was passed in 1942 by the Nazis. It was reviewed again. All legitimate theaters were to submit their scripts. They wanted the right to delete scripts or rewrite scripts anywhere from the Greek tragedies to the modern. Every play from antiquity to the present was to be censored. Music would be selected. Bob Dylan, the Beatles, wouldn't be allowed at all. No music from Tchaikovsky, Prokofiev, or any Russian composer, even prior to the Russian Revolution. And Greece was quickly transformed into the first fascist dictatorship on European soil since Mussolini and Hitler. Now, I looked at those edicts, and I knew that the one problem in the United States was going to be a revolution that was coming along in our country. Because just as I analyzed in 1963, in November 22nd, I said to myself, it's Jack Ruby in that jail to kill Oswald, to silence him. My brain began to work with what I was reading about the edicts in Greece, because these were not communist edicts. This was a sociological thing. And I knew in the summer of 67, this was the spring when it was happening, that something very big in the United States was coming to a head. Because I live in the peninsula here. I'm close to a movement that was growing, going back and forth from San Francisco to Big Sur, spending my summers at Sur. I could see something really good in a true Christian, Judeo-Christian tradition, people making it on, sharing their housing, sharing their food, rapping. And I realized that in this country, we had a revolution. There was a revolution of hairstyle, clothing, cosmetics, transportation, housing, value system, churches. There was an economic revolution that affected cosmetic industry, canned foods, grocery revolution, dietary habits, dwellings, the use of land, no longer needing dwellings, eating outdoors, no high rent for each separate family sharing one place. People were delivering their own babies instead of spending $250 for the obstetrician. They were recycling old clothes, going to the Goodwill, making their own things, wearing burlap, sharing, doing without, withdrawing from spectator sports or amusements, sitting and watching people throw a pigskin ball back and forth. These are revolutions. They're revolutions, economic, sociological. They were breaking the boundaries where white and black could rap. They lived together. They slept together. You didn't know somebody's background, if they were rich or poor. You didn't know if they were Jew or Gentile. Those boundaries were thrown out the window. in 67. Greece was putting them back, but America was throwing them out the window. And the country club thing was going by the wayside, and zoning laws were ignored. If you have a zoning place that's fancy residential, the children are leaving those homes. They're living where there is no zoning. They're up on the land in the communes. They've left their parents in their big homes, and they leave the zoning laws behind. They just split. And real estate values are affected because the kids just aren't going to buy the house with the picket fence any longer and live two people in that dwelling. Now, this was an economic, sociological necessity that if our system as it existed in terms of capitalism were to survive, that the RAND Corporation and other think tanks in America decide what to do for the United States of America. And this was the year of the Beatles. It was the summer of Sgt. Pepper, the Monterey Pop, Haight Ashbury, the Renaissance. Make your own candle, turn off your electricity, turn on with your friends, and wrap it over. What is life all about? The generation was born with an atomic bomb over their head. They weren't going to live long anyway, so there wasn't that much time for hate, and they were really making it. And my car was filled with kids, hitchhikers everywhere. I picked strangers off the street. They slept in our home, slept in the art studio. The Monterey Pop came in, and that weekend we were there every day, and I picked people off the road, and our house was filled. It was the most beautiful thing. I still have yard furniture. They all painted chairs and tables, and everyone pitched in. It was human beauty, and they were making it together. But it isn't the way it was meant to be made. By U.S. Steel and General Motors and Kaiser Aluminum. They wanted to sell you your own car and your own house and your own washing machine and dryer. So in my cross-filing system, because you see, this is summer of 67, and I've been on the assassinations for 4 years, I started a file called Greece, because I didn't watch Greece at all until the coup. But the edicts worried me, and I said, is this a test case of what the United States could do to its people if it had to? Because those edicts were set up very strangely if it was a communist versus a right-wing coup. And I did all the research up to the present day, anything that comes about Greece. Melinda Mercury was on a national television show this morning. I watched her talking about Greece. It's current. So I watched who overthrew Greece. I watched the Pappas Foundation. We've talked about them on the air. They're the men that siphoned the money. Standard Oil, New Jersey, linked with Richard Nixon, Donald Nixon, Spiro Agnew. Agnew's in Greece today as we talk. And I have a file that started in 67, and every article from all the magazines or books that I could get follows up who overthrew Greece, the Lytton industry, the fascists in this country, put those edicts in there. Now, if they put them in there and it worked, they could put them down on us.
You're listening to researcher and broadcaster Mae Bressel. Today's show from 1971, Charles Manson and the Crushing of the Counterculture. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. This is Guns and Butter.
So I have another file in 67 that I started along with my John Kennedy, because I told you before I have 1,600 subject categories of current news. And I started a file called Hippies because articles in 67, it was a sociological phenomenon, were coming out. And in the envelopes I have, I began articles like, who recognizes something good in this movement? Who is putting it down? What is their philosophy? Hippies that were interviewed in magazines like Ramparts or New York Times, what are they saying about themselves? What are people saying about them? And I realized that it was going to be stopped some way because it was taking hold. It captured the basic good that is in people. And I don't believe in the doctrine of original sin. I believe in original goodness. And these children had it. They have it. Somebody was going to have to get them. Yesterday's paper had an article that the head of the whole Navy of Vietnam, South Vietnam, said you're going to have to rule out sex. They have a Navy of 40,000 men, and he said you're going to have to rule out sex. It's decadent. If you want to fight the communists, you've got to stop that. You're a bunch of filthy worms, he said, the head of the Navy of Vietnam. Sex, in order to really fight the communists, you've got to stop your sexual activity. The Vietnamese Navy was told yesterday. Now, this is the same people, Mr. Key and the fascists and the same people in Greece and the people in South Vietnam who are coming out of the kids, their sexual fantasies, their fears that their kids could do what they never could do. I'd like to do a whole show on sexual repressions and fascism and coming down. So in the summer of 67, 68, I was watching how the hippie seed would be put down and what evidence there was that they had to crack it. And in my neighborhood, I've mentioned on two different programs, a man moved in from Texas. He was dressed as a hippie. He wasn't a hippie. He brought his children into this community. He lived a block from my house. He wrote a book for Henry Kaiser called Children of Change. A non-hippie from Texas lived here for about 1 or 2 years, walking down the coast, going to the musical scene, and wrote, just prior to the Sharon Tate murders, that the hippies would have made it. This is what Henry Kaiser published, would have made it if, number one, they had a sense of humor, and number two, they weren't so violent. Now, if anybody had a sense of humor, that generation did, because there wasn't much to be funny about the way the Cold War was going and after Korea and everything lying up. They did have a sense of humor, and there was no violence. There was no violence at all. And this same particular man that was dressed as a hippie, I said before, is now at the Navy postgraduate school. He's Navy, had to be Navy intelligence. How does he get into the postgraduate school if his undergraduate work was a hippie on Big Sur Road, back and forth on the highway? So this particular man, he had his gun and his scopes and his knives and things, and I watched, and there was no massacre. And I was watching the phenomena, how is our government going to handle it? Now, in the summer of 1969, there was a murder in Hollywood, California, in which Sharon Tate, J.C. Bring, Mr. Furkowski, Abigail Folger, Steve Parent, Mr. and Mrs. Bianca were stabbed 44 times. The newspaper did not know who did the murders, but it read, in my mind, like a military ambush. It could be no other way. And it was described by people later as a military ambush. And for the reason that these many people were slaughtered, nobody heard a sign. There were dogs on the grounds that didn't say boo. There was a caretaker in a guest cottage who didn't hear one gun go off, and guns went off. They didn't hear any screaming. Nobody saw getaway cars. The place was completely destroyed. There was time to put hoods over the people, ropes on their neck, leave signs and symbols that would come down on a particular group of our society, two groups, and split. And no, not a dog was killed or barked, and the fellow that lives on the ground said he slept through it. And the telephone poles, they shimmied up the poles, cut the wires, left all this obvious evidence and split. And the way the wires and the lines were cut, I felt that it had to be a military-type ambush. Now, the total effect was to appear or want to appear, if they didn't catch the murders of these people, it would come down on the blacks. That was the hope. Now, it's very interesting in my research on the assassination that the very first man to publish an article on the Sharon Tate murder in my collection of the murders before they had a suspect, the murder was in August, and they found the suspects in December, was a man named Ed Butler. In October 69, he wrote an article. The man who publishes the newspaper that he writes for is Patrick Frawley of Schick Razor Technicolor, who is one of the third largest supporters of Richard Nixon, far right-wing person, and he hires Ed Butler to write articles for him. And Ed is an agent provocateur who worked with Lee Harvey Oswald in New Orleans. And when Oswald had the cover story that he was a communist because he did want to get into Cuba if he could, Ed Butler made a record for him, where Oswald said he was a member of the Fair Play for Cuba, and he was the only member of the New Orleans area, and Ed Butler knew it. Ed Butler worked with Lee Harvey Oswald, so it's interesting that in 1969, the first person who has an opinion on who murdered these seven people would be Ed Butler. In my collection of articles, we have Ed Butler. Now, what is his article called? It says, "Did Hate Kill Tate?" And he goes into the fact that the Black Panthers did this murder because the Panthers are tied in with the communists, and the evidence is that the Panthers killed these people to come into the middle-class America and spread terror. Now, this is what we call provocateurs, agent provocateurs, clandestine governments, where somebody is the first one in, and he's tied in with all these other people and links, and he is taking your brain now and your gray matter. In the event they don't have a suspect, he is saying, here are the clues. Number one, the hood over the draped bodies, was it a turnabout for the Ku Klux Klan? Number two, the rope found around their bodies, strung body to body, is an ironic reminder of lynchings. Number three, the words death of the pig that were scrawled with the human blood over the front door, was that a challenge to blue meanies Remember, the Beatles made a movie about Blue Meanies. He's throwing the whole thing. And number four, Time magazine quoted an article that J.C. Ring was supposed to be anti-black. So you see that Ed Butler has you in the palm of his hand. If they don't have a suspect, you're going to think that the blacks come into fancy residential homes and massacre these lovely white people. To make that even worse, when the people were arrested, they admitted on their own volition that they took the credit cards from Mr. and Mrs. Bianca after they cut their bellies open and went to the icebox to eat, and then took their forks and stuck their forks in their stomachs. They took out their credit cards and left them in the black part of town in Los Angeles so the people would think that blacks killed the foreigners. To back up my own feeling, every word from what these people said afterwards confirms what I knew they were doing. They were coming down on, they could come down on two groups, one for sure. They'll come down on the second. So the first group, the press, fear that the blacks are a part of town, that they're communists, they hate the rich. And Ed Butler goes into their motives, and he says, well, one of the things is that Mr. Blansky is an expatriate from communists, and we know the Panthers are communists. And he says the hate and propaganda here will make other people want to continue these murders. He said that the Panthers were doing this kind of murdering to tip
This is Radio Intelligente Rindajina.